Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. Welcome to today's episode of Gold Star Classroom. I'm your host, Dr. Jerry Jaffe. Today's episode is being recorded live at Toth's Place in Mentor. It's my pleasure to introduce today's students. Sitting on my left, educator in transition and the second funniest man in Garrettsville, Ohio, Eddie Werner.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for having me back, Jerry. Nice to be here.
Good luck. I hope you've learned something from these classes.
I've studied hard since the last one.
Sitting on my right is a Cleveland-based comedian who's headlined at Toth's Place, John Hoffner.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. So you should be.
Thanks for having me on at Toth's.
My pleasure. And sitting directly across from me is former major leaguer who once batted 350, Mark Jaffe.
Well, thank you, Jerry. I was a little afraid. You had one on your left, one on your right. I thought I was going to be on your lap. But,
I have to get special paperwork filled out by my wife for that.
Okay. So that makes you the...
Well, as your instructor and headmaster, it'll be my job to quiz you with questions across the breadth and width of human knowledge and learning, and as any good teacher would, grade your answers. The student with the highest grade at the end of class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. Students, are you ready for your challenge?
Yes.
Can we look at the Golden Banana first? Or just...
What exactly are you competing for? Okay. Your first question comes from the realm of science and geography. And we'll see what you know about the history of geology.
Wait a minute. You said geography, geology,
history, science.
That was everything. Was that everything in there?
It's going to be a math question now.
It's like the potpourri category.
So,
yeah.
Two times 27. No. You undoubtedly are aware that at one time in the distant past, all of the Earth's continents made one supercontinent. All right. If you agree with all of that, even John, who was homeschooled, my question to you is, do you know the name of that supercontinent?
I don't have to buzzer anywhere. I can just hit the table.
I know it too.
You get an A for attempting to hit your buzzer and an F for failing to hit your buzzer.
Pangea?
All right. We have a vote for Pangea. Anyone? Okay. Eddie's nodding. Do you agree or
yes,
want to add anything?
I was going to say that. I might disagree phonetically, like Pangea, but it's something along those lines.
John.
I believe it was Tatooine.
Or maybe it was the United States of South Asian, European, Africa, Australia. All mixed in one. No, we didn't do that. I'm going back with Pangea.
Well, Mark gets full credit for Pangea.
Okay. And I lost points for trying to come up with something.
No, but Eddie lost points for being unable to pronounce Pangea. Pangea is the correct American English pronunciation of that word is Pangea. Let me ask you some follow-up questions.
Have we ever been to Pangea?
We've all been to Pangea.
We're here
right now. Okay. How long ago, actually, approximately, was Pangea a thing? Eddie raised his hand. He's a good student.
I want to say I did a report on this in grade school, and unless science has changed drastically since then.
That was the last century.
I remember 180 million.
All right.
I'm going to go with prior to that, like 250 million, because even if it was at 180 million, I'm still right at 250 million.
John, what do you think of this Price is Right?
I'm going to say $1.
That always wins.
I want to change my answer.
Yes.
I grew up with some homeschoolers, and I want to say 6,000 years ago.
No, 6,000 years ago is when the United States of America was created.
Yes.
And there is no history before that. The continent known as Pangea supercontinent
formed about 300 million years ago.
Wow.
And started breaking apart about 100 million years ago.
Okay, so we're both right.
Yeah, yeah, the right
split the
ballpark
difference.
Sort of thing. Split the difference, get a C minus. Ed, you'll get a bonus 10 points, which brings your score to 10.
I thought I was in the hole, so I thought you were going to say zero, so I'm happy to be on in positive integers at
here
this point.
Is.
What was on the other side of Pangaea?
Yeah, wonderful question, Mark. You get a gold star just for asking. If there is but one supercontinent, then there is but one superocean.
Uh-huh.
And what is the name of that superocean? Eddie, and your grade school report.
I'm going to say Oceania.
Agree or disagree,
I agree
Mark
with
or John?
Oceania.
Palantic or pan-oceanic. Well, so if you left one side of the continent on a boat, and you'd end up just back where you started. No matter what, no matter where you left on a boat, you'd end up back where you started. Damn, I'm still in Pangaea. Tried to get away.
Indeed, Mark's answer is closest to correct because it does involve, again, the prefix pan. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the prefix pan means?
It means somebody who plays the flute?
Like all or everything?
It's Greek for entire. Okay. Pan Thalassa is the name of the super ocean.
Well, that's a bad name. That's not enough.
No, yes. We blame whoever came up with that word. Speaking of whoever came up with that word, here is the A++ question.
Oh, I thought you were going to, like, intro a song there.
Casey Kasem presents the next question in the countdown. Do we know when the word Pangaea was coined or who, in fact, coined it?
I am going to go with Vasco da Gama.
the second most famous da Gama in the history of geology.
I would venture a guess and say maybe Aristotle.
Aristotle being a genius of his era, but I will say the supercontinent theory is from the 20th century.
Oh.
Because you really needed sort of advanced maps that were global to start to see that they were like jigsaw puzzles that fit together.
Can I take a brief tangent?
Yes.
Because you said a few moments ago about you weren't sure because I was homeschooled if I knew that. This is actually an interesting thing that happens with my sort of distorted homeschooling education where some things I was taught and then I grow up and I have to learn retrospectively, like, okay, that was not a real one. They use the one continent theory to explain, like, global languages and Noah's Ark and stuff. And
right.
So I didn't know if that was, like, a fiction.
Sure, sure.
So it's interesting to learn that it's real.
Well, the one continent theory is real, and it's modern geologists would consider, like, a confirmed theory. It's not just a hypothesis or a guess.
So can I guess that you were the one who came up with it? Is that what this is all about, Jerry? You're just trying to get to the point where you say, I coined the phrase.
And that is, in fact, how I will earn the golden banana in today's class.
Professor, since you've given us clues, let's see, 20th century, 1900s, mm-hmm. I'm going to guess either Oliver Stone's father or Chris Rock's father.
Fred Flintstone, are you like?
Bring me a student who's funny.
I do not know any famous geologists. So I am just improvising at this point.
There's a book called The Origin of Continents and Oceans that was published in 1915 by Alfred Wegener.
Good read.
And he actually, this book was written in German, not in English.
It's been they did it into a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Made by Oliver Stone with Chris Rock.
Pangaea's Labyrinth, I believe.
I saw it in graphic novel form. It's all coming back to me now.
Well, I will tally the grades you earned on your first question, and as I do that, I'm reminded that it has been suggested to me that as a teacher, I'm sometimes too harsh in my criticism, and I should use more positive reinforcement.
Oh, good.
So I have here in my hand a list of 101 random ways to praise students. And I will tell you guys, what an imagination.
Thank you.
Now, we will turn our attention to our next quiz question. You, of course, have in the realm of movies and real life, whenever there's spy stuff going on, they talk about things being secret, like actually officially secret things. So I wanted to find out what, if anything, you know about this phenomenon. In the modern United States security classification system, there are three categories. I've already told you one of them. Do you know the names of the three categories?
It's top secret one?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Points for John, top secret. Secret is one, and there's one more.
Classified.
Good guess, but no, sir. Minus 5 points.
So secret, top secret, and there's one more.
Is it above top secret or is below secret?
It is, in fact, below secret.
Whoa.
It's my neighbor.
Mark, I was thinking that, too. I wanted to go higher, like for the president's eyes only or Oval Office only, like super, super high top secret.
Well, I won't say specifically the president, but elected officials or government politicians who find themselves in posts where they need to know secret information often don't get that security clearance. They have like a right to the information by virtue of their jobs as opposed to having...
I think it may be called black ink, where they just cross out, you know, things are blacked out. Right. That's the best. Yeah.
And there is not a higher classification than top secret, but in secret and top secret, they can put designators on them. So you can have secret or top secret clearance, but only in certain fields, like nuclear power or terrorism or homeland security. So they do have like specialized categories, but the actual classification system is top secret, secret,
and
you said classified. The actual word they use is confidential. It's confidential.
Well, can you tell it to us, though?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not allowed to reveal.
Now I'll have to kill the professor.
Well, let's find out. Unless one of you have proper security clearance. Several newspapers in March of 2014 reported the number of people in this country who have security clearances of all three categories.
Combined.
I have the statistics for both each category and the combined total. Uh-huh. We could go with the combined totals, like the important number probably. So in a country of 300 million people, how many people have official clearance for one or of those, you know, security classifications? Any idea? Anyone come across this statistic? Any guesses?
I just have to guess. Say 175,000.
We have one guess of 175,000.
Wow. I'm going to say that's a little high. I'm going to go with 6,014.
Mark thinks
very specific.
John's answer is a little high of 175,000 and goes down to 6,014. Eddie, what do you think of their guesses?
Drew, I will say $1.
Well, you should have said...
I'll say... I'll go between you guys. I'll go 50,000.
50,000. You should have said 175,001 because the number of people in this country that have a security clearance of one of those categories is over 5 million.
Holy smokes.
Indeed. That including, like, military, elected officials, State Department?
Just military automatically gets you some...
Mailmen.
No. being in the military or in the uniformed services, as we say, of the post office...
The Coast Guard.
Or does not get you audit clearance of any kind. You still have to apply and be accepted. It's actually, depending on the level, can take months or years to be cleared. And
do you get it taken away at any point?
That's a great question. They do, in fact, expire, kind of like your driver's license does.
Yeah.
So if you are in a field where...
Yeah, but your driver's license doesn't if you just asked it to be renewed, so...
You do have to be completely re-vetted every time you reapply. And indeed, even though
that... So like Edward Snowden, they'd have to think about it,
Yeah, so background check, a credit check.
Again, or I don't know.
to get top secret clearance, on average, takes over a year of background checks and costs several thousand dollars per applicant.
Do you have research? Why would people apply if it's not part of their job? Why would they go through that process? And if it is part of their job, wouldn't that already be taken care of internally?
It's not taken care of internally, but your question, coupled with Mark's question, actually raises some like hidden problems, even with the statistic of over 5 million. Because, A, there are people who their clearances have expired, but still continue to operate in their
business. Hey, my password still works.
Yes, correct. And on top of that, people whose jobs require them to have clearance, whether it's government, military, industrial, there are also private organizations like university research centers and things where sometimes people need it, are given interim clearance, where they are allowed to have access to the information they need, even though they have not actually been cleared. So if you put both those two extra categories in, you end up with a number that's even bigger than 5 million.
And yet, if I try to go talk to my insurance company to get my wife's number, a new ID card, yeah, that's impossible.
Do they also get free cable?
Yeah. And all this.
Free cable, free Netflix. It's like once you're in, all these other doors open up as well.
Because you were asking, I will say they break down these statistics into three categories. Government workers are about half of the 5 million. And then government contractors and military contractors are the other category. And then they literally have a third category they just call other. Hmm. And that would be either think tanks or universities or just people whose jobs need that information.
Who just want to know.
Just want to know.
I saw a Frontline special on PBS last night about Edward Snowden.
Did you have clearance to watch that?
I hope so. But anyway, he had three different levels of clearance, and they were different from these. It was like a human file or like personnel, and then he was like a contractor, and then he had something else. But he actually had like three different levels of clearance.
Well, I don't know Snowden's background, but A, you sometimes get these different designations.
It'll
be secret, dash, something, something.
Yeah, that's three designations.
And then underneath confidential, there are sometimes public documents it's not really classified, but they're like archived a certain way. So you use the Freedom of Information Act to try to get them, but they don't just hand them out willy-nilly. Some of these things you have to go through sort of short-term clearances, even though they're not confidential or secret documents.
So there are other. Your name is willy-nilly. Don't even think about trying to get clearance.
They don't hand them out.
I did say they.
Bill Nilly, William Nilly, none of those. I'm sorry.
I feel sorry if there's a new person named Edward Rodin that wants to apply. He has no chance at all. No chance.
I don't want to go through all of these broken down numbers, but I do want to give you just one of the breakdowns. The number of government workers who have top secret clearance. The number of government workers that have top secret clearance, that number itself is 800,000.
Wow.
Yes.
And is the president one of them?
Let's hope
I'm not
so.
Sure. No, because by virtue of being elected, he has a right to those documents. So
he doesn't need the clearance.
When people are running for high offices like that, they are being vetted already.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So,
wait, the new number, 800,000 and one.
Actually, I would like to announce my candidacy.
You want to be vetted?
Yeah, why not?
That's cheaper than paying for it.
I want to be in that exclusive club of 800,000 and one.
As I review my grade sheet, I am reminded of what the great Greek philosopher Hippocrates once said. Science is the father of knowledge, but opinion breeds ignorance. And in my opinion, your grades are currently breeding ignorance. So I'm going to give you three students at least one more chance to improve your grades in the form of one more essay question.
Professor, I need some validation. Can you read off something else from the sheet of 100 positive things to say to your students?
Sadly, I have to spread that out over all my podcasts, so I can't waste two on one episode. And -5 points for putting me on the spot. Here's one of the most famous buildings in the world, the Eiffel Tower. But what do you really know about the Eiffel Tower?
France.
Correct. A gold star for John for correctly identifying the country in which the Eiffel Tower stands.
It's a tower.
It was gift. It was a gift from Jesus because he loves us all so much.
Wrong. Do you know when the Eiffel Tower was built?
I would say 1882.
We have a vote for 1882. John and Eddie.
I say 1911.
we have a vote for 1911. That's two different centuries are being represented here.
Yeah, you might not believe me.
I'm 1890.
I actually was thinking 1883, believe it or not, so I'm going to stick to the 19th century.
Okay. Indeed, Mark gets 5 points for being the closest. It was erected in 1889.
1889, okay.
Yes, very good. It was erected...
Because I remember...
You're not that old, Mark.
Did you write a report about it in elementary school? Yes.
No, but it was The Devil in the White City was... good book that they were talking about the Eiffel Tower at the same time going on in the World's Fair and all that.
Well, plus 5 points for getting ahead of my next question.
Oh,
the Eiffel Tower was built as part of the 1889 World's Fair. That is correct. There was an architectural firm that built this tower. Do you know the name of the engineer?
Pierre?
Pierre, the John Smith of France.
Yeah.
Well, you could go with Mr. Eiffel.
And you would be correct, sir. Plus 5 points.
Very good,
Mark.
Very good.
Excellent.
Or Monsieur Eiffel.
Monsieur, yes. When it was built, it was the tallest man-made structure in the world.
And who else is making structures? Like, are cows making structures that were taller? You had to specify man-made.
Indeed, it is in fact shorter than Mount McKinley.
Out of all mammalian structures, it is the tallest.
Do you know its height?
A gentleman never asks.
I know. erected or unerected?
Fully erect. What is the height of the Eiffel Tower?
Let's say...
I know the Washington Monument, 555 feet, and I want to say it's smaller than that.
I would say it's taller than that. I'd say the Eiffel Tower. I'd go 600 feet. I'll go another 100 feet. It's probably about... I mean, you figure 10 stories... 10 feet a story, 60 stories tall.
Hmm.
Sounds about right.
What do you think, John?
I'm thinking shorter also. Mm. Say 450.
It is interesting that you brought up the Washington Monument, student Eddie, because at the time the Eiffel Tower was being built, it was the tallest man-made structure. I do not have its height in my lesson plan, however, so we'd have to fact check the exact height. But... the Eiffel Tower, when it was built, is over 1,000 feet tall.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
And it is over twice as tall as the Washington Monument, which would put it at about the 500-foot approximate height for the Washington Monument.
But they don't have the pool.
Oh, my gosh.
Since it is in France, as John has pointed out, we should perhaps say it is 324 meters tall. And since you, Mark, brought up the approximate number of stories, it is considered the same height as an 81-story building.
Okay.
That was smart, though, going 10 feet a story and figuring it out that way.
In 2010, it recorded its 250 millionth visitor.
And what did they win?
A trip to the top of the Eiffel Tower for the price of only one ticket.
You are 250.
It remained the tallest man-made structure until 1930.
I bet the 250 million and one person was really, oh, I wish it was me. Just missed it.
Of course, modern-day architects often argue and debate about what's taller than what, and what do you count, what counts as a building or a tower or a structure. So if people are interested in this trivia, there's all kinds of directions that it goes. But if we're just going to be
mostly up.
Yes, mostly up. Then it stalls around the 81st floor. But there are two buildings we might compare it to, what's called the tallest structure and what's called the tallest building in the world.
I would say the tallest structure is
CNN Tower.
CN,
Canadian National in Toronto.
Right.
The CN Tower was for a very long time the tallest structure, but in fact a building opened in 2010.
There's two. There's one in Dubai
that's super big,
one in Shanghai, China that's super big. I believe those are the two highest
the
now.
Yeah. The building.
Well, the Burj is on our list. Yeah. It is the tallest structure, and the tallest tower which is what the CN Tower used to be, is in Tokyo. It's called the Tokyo Sky Tree. Okay. The Tokyo Sky Tree is over 2,000 feet tall, and the Burj in Dubai is over 2,700 feet tall.
What about the new build? I want to say Shanghai, somewhere in China, they're building a new one. I thought that was supposed to be a record, too.
There was something called the Canton Tower, which actually is, I believe, also taller than the CN Tower. But in some sort of regional competitiveness, the Japanese made their new tower taller than the Canton Tower.
It's good in a country that has lots of earthquakes.
Yes.
Yeah. Very tall buildings and structures.
Godzilla.
All right.
Yeah, that's true. They got Godzilla. He needs a place to climb.
Yeah.
If Godzilla doesn't have... What's he going to do?
The original Godzilla came out in the 50s, and the out this summer, Godzilla.
Please save your comments for the extra credit portion of the test. However, we have just reached the extra credit portion of the test. So, as I attempt to calculate your final grades and determine the winner of today's classroom prize, the Golden Banana, I'd invite each of you to earn extra credit by elucidating our listeners with an interesting factoid. Would anyone like to go first?
The fact about the Eiffel Tower.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally blue, but they painted it gray in 1951.
I'm going to call your bluff on that. However, I require proper fact-checking, so I don't want to dismiss your answer correctly. If after the class I go home and find out that that's correct, I will email you some bonus points.
Yes, please do.
They have painted the sky tree in Tokyo a very unusual color, which looks white to the naked eye, but it's actually a pale shade of blue that's supposed to blend into the sky and natural environment.
Hmm.
Which I don't know how that works with airplanes and helicopters, but... the Eiffel Tower is, of course, as a work of art, known for its latest works. The iron design of the structure is considered latest. And I have been there... And now that you're challenging me, I guess I cannot say with certainty what color it is. It is gray is the color that comes to mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Eddie or Mark, any extra credit factoids?
Relating to any of the
no,
things
we... No, it can be related to anything you'd like to bring up, as long as it makes you sound smart.
Oh, okay, here. Break a leg.
Yes.
You know where that comes from? I found out where that comes
from. I probably do. Where do you think it comes from?
I think it comes from, like old theater, pre-vaudeville, mm-hmm. where all these people tried to get on stage, and you got paid based on whether you got a leg sticking out onto the stage. That was the determining factor. If you got a leg out, you would break the line, break the kind of curtain, mm-hmm. and so if you broke a leg, you got paid for the evening. So that's why I say break a leg. I hope you get paid tonight.
When you say before vaudeville... I mean, are you saying, therefore, this comes from the 1800s or even older than that?
No, I think, from what I remember, it was 1800s or early 1900s
sure.
or something. That...
The etymology of the expression break a leg for theater people to wish each other good luck is something that is uncertain. That... Suggest theory.
We are all uncertain.
Correct. but we do know that going back to Elizabethan England, there are expressions that can be found about bending the knee.
Oh, well, that's
and
nothing
so,
like breaking a
leg. Yeah,
it's completely different, actually, now that I think about it.
Why did one woman own all of England? What was how was that fair?
Well, it's because her father.
Okay.
Eddie.
Actually,
that was her father.
You get one.
Three quick ones.
You have literally 50 seconds to say one.
Okay. I'll springboard on Mark with break a leg. You asked about Edward Snowden's background. He actually started in the army, but he broke both of his legs in basic training, and that ended his army career. And then after 9/11, he wanted to help, serve his country, so he drifted towards the NSA and national security.
That way. My grandfather broke his hand so that he wouldn't have to serve in his country. A little bit different attempt to get to...
My grandfather...
He actually cut off his thumb really what he did, so he couldn't pull his trigger on the gun in Russia.
Was a World War II veteran who was a pilot and actually had secret-level security clearance because he worked with sensitive technologies. But going back to the 40s, to be vetted because he was Jewish, it took a lot longer for him to get his clearance. He had to get more letters of reference. Local politicians had to vouch for him, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you think your grandfather knew my grandfather?
6 degrees of Jewish separation.
All right, well, having calculated your final grades, which required all 10 of my fingers, it is my pleasure to announce that the winner of today's classroom prize, the coveted golden banana, is Mark Jaffe. And it just remains for me, Jerry, to thank you, Mark, Eddie, and John for sitting in on today's class.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Professor. Thanks, everyone. Fun time.
Thank you.
Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.